Hello, this is the BBC World Service. I'm Shaima Khalil, and this is Egypt's Challenge.
This is where the young people are at. We're just walking into this collection of cafes and plastic chairs all over the place, different colors, yellow, red, and it's a sea of young people, young men and women, women wearing colorful hijabs, and some, you know, with their hair showing. And as you can hear from the buzz, everyone is having a good time. And this, I love this scene, just young women in hijab, smoking shisha, and looking quite empowered, actually.
Welcome to El Borsa, a large pedestrian area full of cafes near Egypt's Stock Exchange, right in the middle of downtown Cairo. It's a two-minute walk from Tahrir Square, the heart of the 2011 revolution, the place where it all began. In this sixth and final program of the series, Egypt's Challenge, I'll be exploring the effects the revolution has had on the very people who are at its forefront, the youth. More than 2 years on, is this the Egypt they had hoped for? And just one block away from El Borsa, the buzz and excitement quickly fades. Walking from the cafes into Tahrir Square, you can feel the mood change. It's darker, quieter, and more threatening.
We actually believe what we've been told about the peaceful revolution.
I'm accompanied by Tariq Mustafa, a young human rights activist who was in Tahrir Square during the 18 days of the revolution, which led to the downfall of former President Hosni Mubarak.
When I enter the square now, it does not feel the same. It is not the same people that you used to know or to see in the square. It is not the same vibes. You don't feel safe or secure anymore. You feel like everybody has given up on this square.
As we walk around, I can see what Tariq means. In early 2011, I remember well when the square was a sea of humanity. Thousands upon thousands of people were drawn to it, making it hard to move around, find a place to sit, or even stand. I remember tents covering the gardens in the center of the square. The atmosphere, electric. The mood, extraordinary. This time, the square is virtually empty. Small groups of people gather here and there, and everywhere, there's evidence of violence.
This is an Interior Ministry police truck that has been set on fire, full of rubbish inside and outside, and it smells. Gosh, the smell is really strong.
Well, I remember that day very well when this truck was set on fire. I mean, nobody is paying attention anymore. I mean, now while entering the square, nobody will stop you to check on your ID and make sure who you are and if you carry weapons or not.
See, one thing that's changed for me is the graffiti on the wall, and this wall of the American University in the street is very, very symbolic, kind of a documentation of the revolution through graffiti. Now, all I can see are faces of dead people, faces of those who died during the 2 years of the revolution. And some of them are actually quite disturbing because some of them are of faces that have been deformed, obviously by being beaten up, and in reference to police brutality. Most of the faces on this wall are of young people, and they're all dead.
What breaks your heart, really, is that this revolution is not successful so far. Okay. It's like their deaths was for nothing.
But accountability, Tariq, how can you say that? I mean, the very fact that their faces are on the wall, isn't that some kind of sign that this is working? Not as fast as you want, maybe, but it's working.
The graffiti and the pictures and the paintings and everything could disappear between a day or another. Year after year, nobody would remember. I'm sorry.
Okay, we've got a group of young people fighting with a street vendor. A regular occurrence now in streets around the square. Violence can happen at any minute. Are we safer here, you guys? This was one of the most vibrant, alive, buzzing streets in downtown. I mean, I remember coming to the street and, first of all, feeling completely safe, but also I remember coming to meet my friends. And the feeling that I'm getting now is actually quite disturbing. I feel like I just have to look over my shoulder all the time, find out who's following me. We've just passed by a group of young men who are all wearing hoodies and huddle around this truck.
And Chaima, by the way, I mean, you are lucky for being surrounded with men. But trust me, when you are alone in a street like that, Nothing is guaranteed. Maybe you will get stabbed, maybe you will get robbed, maybe something will happen to you, maybe you will be sexually harassed.
Anything can happen here. Yeah. And you know what I'm not seeing? I'm not seeing any police.
It's unsafe they won't, for they them won't stop.
It's unsafe for the police to come here.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
As we were talking, I noticed a young woman leaving the American University building, which is next to Tahrir Square. She was walking quickly.
How are you? We're with the BBC. Can we talk to you for a second?
No, thank you.
I don't see women around here. Seeing you is like kind of...
BBC?
I want to get a sense from you as a young woman, very, very beautiful, and you're conservative. You're wearing this lovely purple hijab. How life is different for you as a young woman 2 years on?
يعني يمكن بيطلع الحال مش ألطف
إزاي؟
مش عارفة
Basically she says, look, we're so tense, we're on edge all the time because, especially because of what we watch in the media. There's a general sense of depression and disappointment and that reflects on me as well. The things that we used to be able to do, going out and just having a good time, you can't do that anymore. Do you regret the revolution ever having happened?
دلوقتي أو
Yes, you do regret it.
قناعة 100%
100%, 100% yes.
أنا كنت في الأول مع الثورة لكن دلوقتي لا أنا ضدها تماما يعني
You're against the revolution.
Yes.
Do you think that freedom and democracy don't really matter because now you're not safe?
أكيد ما الحرية والديمقراطية بتيجي في إيه يعني تحسين أوضاع الحياة كلها
They say, well, what is freedom and democracy? Freedom and democracy is about making life better. It's about making traffic better, jobs better, more available. That hasn't happened. Nothing has changed. Everything has changed to the worse. Where is freedom and democracy? We'll let you go before it gets even darker. Then later.
During the conversation with Manal, I'd noticed Tariq getting more and more agitated with what she was saying. And when she left, he just couldn't hold back.
What am I expecting from a typical middle-class citizen in Egypt?
But that's not fair. She's expressing her own opinion.
Yes, she's expressing her own opinion and I'm expressing my own opinion.
Okay.
Middle class in Egypt, they did not pay for this revolution. Yes, they were privileged in Mubarak's days and they did not feel threatened. But that doesn't mean that people were not threatened. That doesn't mean that other people were not hardly surviving under this regime. And actually, what are we expecting? That the revolution will come and pamper us in less than 2 years? Actually, revolutions take years and years and years till you start realizing or finding any results. Actually, because I care, I'm depressed. If I don't care, if I'm just like her, if I'm just like many people who just want to be safe...
But she just said she was depressed as well. But she's depressed because she's a young woman that cannot live her life normally. Look, she clearly can't walk alone in the street.
As if there was no gender-based violence during Mubarak? As if there was no violence against women during Mubarak? Come on, what are we speaking about?
In an earlier program in this series, we focused on Egypt's faltering economy. It's facing a multitude of problems, but its most pressing is mass unemployment. And it's the young who are hit the hardest. No wonder the revolution is starting to taste sour to some. Samer Atallah, an economist at the American University in Cairo, describes the problem to me in stark statistics.
Half of Egyptians are below 24 years old. The majority of the unemployed are in the age bracket of 15 to 29. That's about nearly three quarters of the unemployed.
That is a very young country.
Yes.
And despite that, it's not using this young energy to its benefit.
We're creating a frustrated generation. They cannot find a job. They don't have enough skills to acquire any job that will give them decent living. They want to get married. They want to have a house. They want to find a decent job that pays them well and that respects their dignity. And at the same time, the jobs that require a lower level of skills, they compete with the ones that have university degree. So you would have a coffee shop waiter that has a degree in law. And this is what we call in our field the credential inflation. You have taxi drivers that are doctors.
How many jobs need to be created then in Egypt annually?
I think in the order of 800,000 to up to 1 million. To reach that, in my assessment, they need lots of work on education and lots of work on the job market. And to my knowledge, there is nothing concrete I've seen that tackle these two elements.
Are you seeing a solution on the horizon?
What I see is the opposite. I see increasing the frustration of the youth. I see that when the Ministry of Interior deals with extreme violence to these demonstrations, it basically creates an avalanche of violence in the street and it doesn't end.
Egypt's official statistics agency says that unemployment is now at 13%, though nobody takes that figure seriously. Most economists will tell you the figure is much, much higher, though no one seems to be able to give me an accurate figure, not even those in power. Gihad al-Haddad is national spokesman for the Muslim Brotherhood.
We don't have the latest unemployment figures, I'm afraid. And I think it'd be very difficult for you to find someone that can say with assurance that they have unemployment figures in Egypt. The ones that are published by government have gone through a process of retouching under the old regime, and thus there's a huge gap in the accuracy and the availability of such information.
Is the government worried about unemployment in Egypt?
Of course, everyone's worried about unemployment in Egypt, and the fact that it's mostly in youth.
People are saying, well, unemployment is up, budget deficit is up, no job creation, no investment, so there doesn't seem to be a project.
Well, there is a project, it's running and functioning. I'd give you one simple example, Libya. Libya in the next 2 years requires 1.5 million workers from Egypt alone. The Ministry of Industry has orchestrated a massive blue-collar employment program with a number of factories in Egypt and multinationals. And I think they've surpassed about 300,000 jobs in the first couple of months that they've installed it. Our estimate of the targets of the jobs that need to be created for us to actually achieve the 8% growth in the GDP target was between 800,000 to 900,000 jobs annually. We, as the Muslim Brotherhood, have centered our plan that the developmental power of the society will not be housed in the state. It will be housed within the private sector.
What would you say to young people who would say to you, we went to Tahrir Square, we have risked our lives, some of our friends died, 2 years on, all of this was for nothing?
I'd say they don't get the picture right. Because at the end of the day, this is not a utopia, this is real world. We are literally handling a failing state at the moment, whereby it has over 7 million listed employees, the largest, oldest bureaucracy in the world, and after Mubarak, riddled with corruption and inefficiency.
Surely the Muslim Brotherhood, surely the president can fix that.
Well, in old Egypt, I would have said yes, because the president was a dictator. In new Egypt, no, it's not one party that can fix it. This is the responsibility of all Egyptians and all factions that have different roles in how to govern a society. I'm 31 years old. If I'm the youth, then I need to engage not just with the parliamentary elections, but also with the government, with the different political parties, with the sphere of governance as a whole. And very few of the youth have recognized the need to move from a revolutionary phase to a constitutional legitimacy phase, whereby political actors set the scene, not revolutionary groups. And part of the realization of the revolution is the fact that we were given our choice back as Egyptians, and even as youth. We didn't have that luxury of choice before, that freedom of choice, that right to choose who our leaders are. Now we're faced with that choice, but that choice doesn't come cheap.
I started this BBC series, Egypt's Challenge, in my hometown of Alexandria. And that's where I'm returning now, to the main square of Saad Zaghloul, where I remember playing as a child.
We're in Saad Zaghloul Square, and this is the center of Mahattat al-Raml in downtown Alexandria. And just to my left, there is a demonstration, a march, people carrying banners saying, Aish Hurriya Adala Ijtimaiya, freedom, bread, and social justice. Along with the demonstration, you can hear something quite different inside the square, because the guys that I came here to meet are Skate Impact. They're skaters. And you guys are the founders of SkateImpact.com?
Yes.
Omar and Sharif. How did it grow from you two brothers skating on the streets of Alexandria to this becoming a movement, SkateImpact.com in Alexandria?
Okay, I started skating in 1992, and there was not a scene, so...
No internet.
And no Facebook.
So when you guys started skating in the early and mid-90s, what was the people's reaction to you?
They were looking at us like kids. They never respected us.
We're standing in a very Alexandrian place. This is the heart of the city, and it's very traditional. And I used to come here all the time as a child to play and play on the steps. And I can't help but think that the way that you guys talk and look, you're wearing hoodies and...
And have long hair.
We might as well just be somewhere in New York. Isn't this too Western? What's Egyptian about it?
They are Egyptian, 100%. This is our life. We're doing what we love.
Okay. This is the security guard, and he's basically telling everyone to get out of here. He's saying it's forbidden. ليه ممنوع حضرتك؟
ممنوع عشان تكسروا الرخام وتكسروا الدنيا وزعجل البني ادمين اللي قاعده. ممنوع دي الجنينه دي بتاعت منظر اسكندريه.
He's an old man. He's wearing a a cap and he's holding two bags and a broom and he's cleaning up the place and looking very, very annoyed and angry at the young people who are skating. And basically, his problem is that the skaters are going to break up the tiles. And he's saying, this is just a park. It's to be looked at, not to be played in. Is that what you guys have to face all the time?
Yeah, most of the time.
But also, don't you see his point that basically not everybody finds this entertaining? And he's saying that you're bothering people who are sitting there. Doesn't he have a point?
No, because actually people are enjoying what we're doing. People are looking at us like they're amazed.
Should we go skate in the streets and get hit by cars? That's not the solution. If you try to do something different, most of the time you can hear the mamnua. It's like, it's
banned.
Forbidden. It's banned. It's an easy word to say. We hear it a lot.
So this mamnua concept that you're talking about, does this represent the old Egypt?
I think anything that's unfamiliar to the Egyptian eyes, it becomes forbidden or banned.
You're the only young lady in this group. What's your name?
My name is Hannah, and I've been skating for 6 years.
How old are you?
I'm 19. We're trying to make Alexandrian people see us skater as something that's become familiar with them, you know, accepting.
How has it been different during the last 2 years after the revolution?
People started to look at us differently. They started to respect us.
People before the revolution didn't have much respect for the young generation. And after the revolution, that people found out that this young revolution can't change the world and it can't change Egypt. And we are part of this, so we started to get much respect.
Basically, you guys are living my dream. I've always wanted to skateboard. And
well,
of course,
skateboarding is
now
the
I'm too
sport
old.
That...
You're not that old to start skating. Just get a board and have fun.
Right, so I've just walked into this small flat in central Alexandria. And it's nothing that you would expect in any Alexandrian flat because the writing on the walls is all about the revolution. It's all about being young. One big writing here says, Kelem Kitir, lots of talk, expect the unexpected, radio tram, the underground voice of Alexandria. Now, I was born and raised in Alexandria and I've never heard of the underground voice of Alexandria.
Actually, radio tram was inspired by the Egyptian revolution. So we can't let go now. We are with the revolution, it inspired us, and we are continuing.
Special rendezvous.
Radio Trom.
Basically, it's because you found that you could say something. So you want...
You know what?
Radio Trom is an underground internet radio station targeting 18 to 25-year-olds. They play a mix of Arabic and Western music and challenge the status quo.
And sometimes we go ourselves to the demonstrations and we live from there. We get the real idea, what's really happening in the street, we get that on air.
But when you go on air, how important is it to keep a balance? Because you are broadcasting to thousands and thousands and thousands of people. I mean, how do you keep that balance to make sure that you give both sides of a story?
One of the reasons that we made Radio Trom that when we look at all the media that cover all the incidents that happened in Egypt, they always give a point of view that the government wants, but here we give them the truth, what actually happened there.
We did a campaign about the sexual harassment, and we give people the chance to talk about what's happening in the streets.
I think what I'm getting from you is there's this need and urge to express yourselves and to say something that you don't hear anywhere else. But also, just listening to this as an outsider, I still feel that this represents something new in Alexandria, but it also represents the polarization, the division of the society right now.
The Islamist presenters, actually, they have their own channels,
own
and
channels,
they don't work with any others.
Yeah.
But it's not our problem, it's everywhere, because, I don't know, they just get what they wanted from the revolution and they left us.
So, division, them and us.
There is a division.
But how does that make you feel?
I feel like I don't belong.
I'm disappointed because I thought there is always something bigger than us and our beliefs.
It's the hard part of the revolution.
I find it kind of healthy because we are now talking about it.
So 2 years on from the revolution, you guys want...
to leave.
Radio Trom, a rendezvous spécial. A special rendezvous.
Underground radio of Alexandria.
I want to stay because I actually see what we are doing here at Radio Trom, that we find hope in what we are doing. Maybe I will not have the perfect life that I'm dream of or find in the movies, but I'm actually dealing with it.
All of this didn't exist before, so definitely there's a change.
Yeah. Maybe.
It's
just changing.
It's not big enough and it's not fast enough.
Yeah.
My conversation with the young Radio Tram team reflects so many that I've had over the course of making this BBC series. Most people had high hopes, probably too high, about what the revolution could deliver, and so many now feel let down. Possibly one of the biggest challenges now facing my country is how to recapture that optimism of those earlier days to make people feel that all the change has been worth it. Gihad al-Haddad of the Muslim Brotherhood again.
Anyone who sat in Tahrir Square during the 18 days, who looked in the eyes of the youth around him, can see there is a certain solidarity amongst Egyptians that is unbreakable. At the end of the day, when push comes to shove, we all stick together.
Many of the young people I've spoken to have this them and us mentality. So it's the Islamists and us, or us and the liberals. Aren't you worried about this division?
I don't think so. I'm not worried about it. I think that we didn't have a chance to know each other under Mubarak. We were all separated by very thick bridges and walls and so on. And the bashing state security of Mubarak made sure that no such contact was ever viable. Otherwise, it would threaten the crown of Mubarak, so to speak. There's no right and wrong in this. There is a system of management. And the system that we all adopted was democracy. One man, one woman, one vote. And the democratic process itself filters out what's the best fit model for the state as a whole. It will not fall to the likeness of everyone, but it will fall to the likeness of the majority of the state.
And that optimism is shared by Samer Atallah. Whilst the crisis is felt most acutely among Egypt's youth, it is from this generation, he says, that the answers will come.
This is a very young country indeed. That's why I'm optimistic.
So you're not worried about this 50% of young people in Egypt?
No. If anything, this is our comparative advantage, this human capital. Compare that to Europe or Japan, this is an asset. 10 years down the track or 15 years down the track, these are the people who will be shaping the future of this country.
I've spoken to different people across the board. I've spoken to a group of young people who started their own radio station online, another group who are skating in the street as self-expression. And it seems to me that 2 years on, young people are kind of carving niches for themselves. They're kind of creating spaces for themselves in the country.
Yes, they are. I think the revolution put the Egyptian population on the right track. It's the inability of the leaders to understand that and to adapt to that. And with this, I think that we are creating a new generation of leaders that are capable of responding to the needs of the people. And if this does not give you optimism, then I don't know what gives you. It makes me shiver, so it is definitely a very positive sign. I'm just worried about the coming year or two.
It's a mild spring night here in Alexandria, and I'm sitting by the beach looking at the Alexandrian harbor. There's a rotating beam of light, the lighthouse, which has been a symbol in this city's history for centuries. And it crosses over me and just goes all the way across the city. And I'm here with my friend Ahmed Atiyah, a fellow Alexandrian. So, Ahmed, you had a chance to leave and go to the United States. You didn't. You stayed in the country. 2 years on, how do you feel now?
I'm very confused about it. I mean, I don't regret my decision, but honestly, if I knew that it would have ended up with the Muslim Brotherhood president, and that really I'm very concerned about my income, economy is in a very bad place, and I'm planning to get married, and in the past 2 months we had at least 50% increase in home appliances prices, and about 10 to 20% in all the food items. So it's getting increasingly hard to live.
Are you being impatient, do you think? I mean, this takes time before you see a real change. It's only been 2 years.
Yes, but I'm not sure about the outcome. Here's the thing, though. I would feel more patient if I felt that the majority of Egyptians are trying to take part of this process of change to better. The increasing majority of the Muslim Brotherhood and their increasing rise is just making me feel, well, it's going to take even more time.
Do you feel betrayed by the revolution then? That it hasn't delivered what you hoped it would?
I wouldn't say necessarily betrayed, but rather I fought a battle and I lost it.
Ahmed, hearing you speak about your life and knowing you, knowing how talented you are, knowing how gifted you are, knowing how passionate you are about your job and what you do and wanting a better quality of life. It makes me sad that people like you don't feel that they have a place in the country. Do you see a future for you here in Egypt?
I'm not sure.
As a young girl living in Egypt, I could only have dreamt of a revolution in my lifetime. For this BBC series, Egypt's Challenge, I've discovered so much about this country I still call home, things which make me feel proud to be Egyptian. But I've also discovered things which have unsettled me. Everywhere you go, there's a sense of empowerment, a sense of newfound freedom, but there's deep anxiety too. Life has become a whole lot harder. Everywhere you go, there's rising unemployment, food and fuel shortages, and a real sense of insecurity. The revolution has exposed huge rifts within society, and I'm left wondering how these rifts will be healed, and who will do the healing. Can the Islamists and liberals find common ground? And can the army, for so long the arbiters of power in Egypt, stay out of politics? Everyone I have met on my journey seems caught between despair and hope. Despair at what the glory days of the revolution have come to, and hope that one day this revolution will mean a better life for those who fought for it. You've been listening to Egypt's Challenge with me, Shaima Khalil, and my producers, Daniel Tetlow and John Murphy. Document.